Good morning. Well, wait, afternoon for some of you out there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's lunchtime, isn't it?
About that time.
Yeah, about that time. Well, good morning. Good afternoon. My name's John Hansman over here in almost springtime Washington State. It's finally going to get into the 70s this weekend. I'm like, it's Monday and I'm ready.
Humidity starting to kick in here already.
That's right. And my co-host, I'm also the co-host. We're the co-host. It's like the, you watch The Office and there's the co-managers. Co-host. What's happening? Co-hostesses. Yeah.
And this is Emilio Mejia and welcome to episode 11 of Business Bites Podcast. How you guys doing?
Well, admittedly, we're a little bit behind on getting out content. The last couple of weeks have been a little crazy. So we're back at it again. We're going to talk about employee mistakes, tools, and mindset today. We don't have a guest. So luckily you guys get to chat with us for the next 35, 45 minutes. And we're going to talk a bunch about just some things that crop up when you think about cybersecurity that you may not be thinking about. I think that's the number one. So I'm going to talk a little bit about a story that I just had that happened with me. Amelia and I were kind of talking about this earlier. I had an employee of a company who basically had a falling out with the owner and they deleted everything. Like they went on a deleting rampage. They deleted their mailbox. They deleted all their documents. They reformatted their computer, their laptop that they had been taking home. They literally went ballistic. And fortunately for the owner, we were there. And so we only had one particular thing that got lost that, it was some password stuff, and that's fortunately super resettable because of the way things are set up. But we recovered everything else. We recovered all the emails. We had all of that stuff backed up and everything. So that owner's sitting in a really good spot. My point of bringing this up is I think that when we talk about cybersecurity, we tend to talk about or think about the Russians or the Chinese or the hackers in India or those kind of things. And we're not necessarily thinking that the issues can come from our own house, from our own business.
Getting next to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had from it happen, somebody that you trust.
Had it happen multiple times to clients. We're actually going through something like that right now. So I can't speak on that one, but later on I'll share another story that happened actually during COVID time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And here's what I would say, especially if you're a small business, as you grow and you get bigger, and our company, we have two full-time technicians, my wife and I, and a couple contractors. As you grow into business, you have to start putting more and more trust in your employees. That's part of growing your business. My thing that I implore business owners to think about is how much do you want to give them? How much control? I think that you have to trust your employees. I implicitly believe like trust goes both ways. You know, you're hiring people because of their ability to work with you and you should trust them. So there's no like, I'm not by any means saying don't trust your employees. But what I am saying is that you need to put safeguards in place in case the person you trust becomes untrustable. What happens if the person you thought would never hurt your business all of a sudden decides they want to hurt your business?
Like the way you put it, the person you trust becomes untrustable.
Yes, the person you trust becomes untrustable. And it's not far from the truth. We see this on a regular basis where business owners have an internal person that does a lot of stuff for them because they don't know how to do it. So they hire somebody who does. that person has a lot of ability to move around their business and do things and has a lot of access. But in some cases, it's completely uncontrolled access. And now when that person leaves or something happens, that owner's left with literally nothing because the person literally just, destroyed it all.
Yeah.
So you really have to think about that.
Did this person know they were being let go? That's usually the scenario when the person knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know something's going to come down the pipe.
Naturally, I didn't dig into the story, but this was like the couple days they were having a falling out, and this was a couple days before it fully came to fruition.
Let me interject here, and then you can tell me your thoughts on this. I've had clients, and this will be a good tip for the listeners that are business owners. I've had clients that want to let somebody go and either let them know in advance or don't include IT in the decision-making. So what happens is IT is never aware and they can't get in front of it in time. So if they come to the IT department and they're like, look, we're thinking about doing this, this, and that, the IT, which kind of has like a bird's eye view, can say, well, that person has access to X, Y, and Z. We should get in front of that if you're going to have that conversation with them, on Monday, and tell them their last day is Wednesday, or give them extra time. Sometimes they think they're being nice or they're being considerate, but they don't know that they're putting the company and the company's resources at risk. So I've had it happen two times where someone's been told, and I think the employer thinks that because of the way they're letting them go or because of a severance package, that the person is going to be completely fine with the decision. And then the person starts, like you said, they start deleting files, they start deleting emails, and, they start doing whatever they think they can do. Luckily, we always have backups, but, what if it's a different scenario? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. Oh, here's what I would say for sure. I would say this. We have a culture within our co-owners or our businesses that we work with of being really involved with our business owners. So they naturally work with us when that stuff happens. I've all the times when I've had somebody let go in the last few years, they've always come to us ahead of time and said, hey, we're thinking about doing this, or we are doing this. We're going to do it on this date. Can you be ready for it? So it's very unlikely that we would have been caught by surprise, just because that's not, but we kind of, when I talk with the client ahead of time, like when we're in onboarding and all that, we have that conversation ahead and we just say, hey, if you're going to let somebody go, bring us in on this. If you're considering it, like, let's chat about it. We're a team member with your management team. So we want to be a part of that. When it comes to that, I think that you really have to consider their position. I personally believe that no employee should know that they're being let go until the day that it's happening. I don't think it's in your best interest to say, hey, by the way, we're probably going to let you go on Thursday. Because now you've given that person plenty of time to consider it. You don't know, especially if you don't know how they're going to respond. They could be like, okay, well, that sucks. And then they're going to be fine. Or they could just, people do weird. I've seen when I was running a 24-hour operation with a lot of people who are starting wage, people. I saw crazy stuff when people got let go. I saw everything from like crying to like punching walls to like thinking they're going to punch me, that type of stuff. You don't know how they're going to respond. So your best option is to talk with your IT department, prepare ahead of time, shut off everything on the day that it's happening, and don't give them any warning. It's not being rude. It's a business decision to not give them warning. Okay. I don't think it's something that it's definitely just, it's a wise business decision to wait it out and then inform IT. I would not even inform anybody, but like who needs to know. Like I wouldn't inform employees. I wouldn't. That stuff should all be confidential. That's, and that creates good culture. Like the last thing you want too is to create a culture where the rumor mill starts going before somebody's gone. Like that doesn't make other employees feel safe as well.
I agree. I think this was also a one-off event, or let me not say one-off event. What I'm trying to say is this happened, this particular scenario was during COVID. And we're talking about a company with a lot of employees when, you know, a three-figure number is being furloughed or laid off.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about over 100 employees. You know, so, you know, it's going to be, you know, you could do it to one person and they might get upset. If you're doing 100, you know, you're going to have several people that get upset, right? It's basically a numbers game on who's going to be mad, who's going to try to take it out on the business, who's going to maybe take it out on the personnel, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being intimidated that someone's going to come try to physically assault you for some reason. So definitely something that companies should be aware of and take, you know, look into, take strong consideration into.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You just have to be smart about it. You really can't. You can't just trust that they're a really nice person because you just don't know. I've seen like the nicest people turn just absolutely crazy when things, because think about it, in a sense, you're messing with, I mean, not messing, that sounds like it's your fault, but your decision is impacting their financial well-being. Now, that's your job as a business owner to make that decision. There's nothing wrong with that. But in their mind, depending on the circumstance, you might be, you know, they might be thinking, well, you're screwing me over. What? There's a whole bunch of things that can happen.
You're taking food and, off their plate to
yeah,
say it.
And, yeah. So you just have to be smart about it and keep your business in a really safe place and be thinking about that. So that's all I'm saying. I'm just saying, don't give one person in your business the keys to the kingdom. You should have a way of monitoring and managing all the passwords for your employees. You should have a method of making sure that any master password you're setting up for them and they're not changing that. You should have things in place just to make sure that your main administrator does not, like if they got hit by a bus tomorrow, you're not up the creek. And we see it all the time. Like somebody leaves or a key person disappears or they have to let them go or whatever. And then all of a sudden the business is crippled for like 4 months while they try to figure it out. And it's like one of those things, like there's the limited resources of being a small business, but then there's also like, there's tools out there to, you know, to keep this from being a problem as well. So I think that's important. You just have to keep that in mind.
And around employee mistakes, shifting gears a little bit, not just malicious things, but how can business owners prevent basic mistakes?
Well, I think that there's two ways, and let's switch the topic to kind of where we were going earlier. When we look at cybersecurity, we look at just the overall way we think of how we protect a business. We do it in four categories. So we have kind of four major groups, major areas that we cover to protect a business from having a cybersecurity attack or an employee security attack, you know, insider type of security attack. So with that, we have the first one, the first part that's like a thing that we provide is going to be employee education. So this is, and we talked a little bit about this, there's many ways you can educate.
Yeah.
You could do, and I don't recommend this, you could do CPR style where everybody goes in and they get a test that everyone can pass. And, you know, the CPR guy gives you the answers and, you know, at the end of the thing, you might be able to save someone's life, but hopefully we're paying attention. at least during the that part where you're you know, working with the dummy, and then all I could think of is The Office and singing Staying Alive. But you know, there's that way. It's not my favorite. And then there's new tools out there that allow you to do what they call gamification. Gamification means that there's a reward system for your employees as they complete tasks. So, for example, our cybersecurity training goes out. There's a yearly, so you have like a 30-minute yearly cybersecurity training, and then there's a monthly. When you complete your yearly and you complete, sorry, a weekly, when you complete your yearly and you complete your monthly, you get points towards that. When you don't fall for a phishing attack, you get points. When you fall for a phishing attack, you don't get points. You lose points if you click on a phishing link. There's really good tools out there to just make sure that you have a way to keep employees engaged. And if it's a really good product, it's going to start adding content that's happening right now. So they're going to be looking at the actual things that are happening in the world, and they're going to create a actual video around that topic.
Let me see. I have a couple of takes on this. Actually, I like how you worded that at the beginning, because I was at that show last week and I was telling people, you know, there's three things we do, although I was not saying that to them in order, but I was saying the modern response is disaster recovery. And then I was like, but at the very beginning, we educate everybody. So one of the other things I was telling them, and something for audiences to know, is what are we protecting against or educating? It's usually one of three things, right? There's one of three things you want to protect. Well, there's maybe more than one thing, but some of the three things you want to protect in your business are, one, your financials, right? The money that your business has made. Number two is the intellectual data or intellectual property. So whatever your secret sauce is that, you know, you're giving out to consumers that you don't want there, or just your consumer and client information, right? Information you're taking in. Let's pretend you're a CPA, you're a lawyer, you're a doctor. That client information you're taking in is what we're trying to protect. One of those three things usually. And the three or four things that we're touching on right now all have to do with those three things. So right now, employee education. If you're in the medical field, your education should be different than someone that's in the financial field. Your education should be different than someone that's in product manufacturing or supply chain or logistics. So the employee education sometimes will overlap, right? We're talking about basic security and awareness and how to access emails and things like that. That's going to be one set of education. But there also has to be industry-specific employee education that'll help the employee depending on what sector of business it is that they're in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, right. And there's different, because there's different rules based on the correct type of business. Industry.
Yeah, depending on the industry, right. Correct.
Medical is going to have different training than like retail or maybe a basic construction company or something like that. Yeah.
All right.
So my point is this. Part of a really good cybersecurity plan, you should have training. You should have conversations. You should have a culture that states that cybersecurity is an important thing and that you want to make sure that your employees are thinking about it. Whether you do that with a tool, which is what I recommend, or you do that with a regular meeting, you need to be doing something. You don't want to just be ignoring this.
I have a question for you, and let's not veer too much into it because of time, but how do you feel about not only getting education through employment, but other means, or educating people because in their regular lives they should be? And let me tell you why I asked this. As I mentioned to you, I had the trade show and I had a booth last week, and I had three people walk up to me and say, I was personally hacked within the last 3 months. One guy had a 40K following Instagram account. It takes a lot to get to 40,000 followers. 40,000 followers on Instagram. he lost it. You know what my first question was, right? Did you have, you know what it is. No, on the account, did you have MFA?
I said that. MFA? I said two-factor.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Whatever. That's not what I heard. Sorry. That was my first question. And of course, his response was, no, I didn't. Yep. So again, like these things, I know that we're talking about businesses and keeping business safe, but just in people's personal lives, if you have elderly people in your lives, this is going to affect them the worst because they're not up on the technology. They don't know what's happening. They're not on social media looking at things that are being attacked. I can't tell you how many times someone has walked into my wife's bank and taken a large amount of money, and then the bank is required to ask them, are you being pressured into this? Is this a scam? And they always say no. And then they come back a week later crying, saying it was, but I was told not to tell you because then the cops, you know, then I would get in trouble. So just that type of education, not only from a business sense, but from a personal sense, like, you know, you want to be able to protect the people, you know, your family, the people around you, your friends, just other people in general, because nobody wants something like this to happen to them. So I know we're talking about employee education, but I think this needs to extend beyond that, which makes the cybersecurity conversation, I'm sorry, the security awareness culture more of a thing, you know, if I can label it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I watched, which I'm not going to suggest it, but we watched The Beekeeper. Did you ever see The Beekeeper? It was a fascinating, way over the top, like no Indian call center, no call center looks like it did in The Beekeeper. But basically, it's got Jason, I forget what his last name is. He's a guy from The Transporter and some lady who's working with, gets all of her money stolen. She commits suicide while Jason goes on a rampage. Like it's crazy, but it shows just at the very beginning, it shows just how vulnerable people are and just how good at social engineering these hackers are, or these scammers are at manipulating different people. And that's why employee education is important. I think that we can circle right back to that. Employee education alone can lower statistically the chances of your business having a cyber attack, because your employees will go, oh, you know, that doesn't look right. It's going to help trigger them to go, yeah, this doesn't seem right based on the training that I've received. It's going to help them see something that's fake. That's why employee training, grandma training, whatever you want to say, it's super important. You have those conversations with people if it's about personal stuff. But when it comes to your business, you have to have some good training in there that's happening regularly so that people are up. So the idea of cybersecurity stays current. You don't want to do a yearly or 2-year cybersecurity one-time training and then, you know, that's it. So
those don't work. Those don't work.
Yeah, so I'll let you. You can jump in on topic number 2 as soon as I can find it. Of our comprehensive cybersecurity, which is monitoring and response.
If you don't know, I mean, you don't know what you don't know, as I was stating before.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that mean?
For instance, you have a company. Well, a couple of things. Let's say dark web monitoring, right? You don't even know that your credentials are out there sometimes because you don't know that, you know, Jose, your office assistant, used his jose@chewit.com to log into his Park mobile app, which I've seen gets hacked a lot. He logged into his Twitter with that email. He logged into his Facebook with that email. And then when Twitter, Facebook, and the Park mobile app were hacked, they took those credentials and that information. It just so happens that Jose uses the same exact password for those apps that he uses for your Office 365 and your infrastructure. So if the hackers just want to, you know, take a shot, you know, throw it against the wall to see if it works, and they try to log into his email, then they have his credentials. and now they're in there. So again, a tool like dark web monitoring, for instance, I know that's the example I just used, or a tool that can tell you when your company is trying to be brute force attacked on the email side or the Office 365 infrastructure side, just gives you visibility to what's happening so that you can prepare, so that you can better prepare yourself and try to mitigate some of these attacks. You know, another reason why we push cybersecurity risk assessment so much, when people are like, I just had it happen to me right now. I met somebody and they're like, hey, I was hacked a week ago. We lost 20,000. Can you give me a quote? How much is your services? And then I started saying, you know, I need to do a cybersecurity risk assessment. We need to see what's happening. We need to see where you're being attacked from. We need to see what in your business we need to protect better.
Right.
Right. Are they after your finances? Are they after your intellectual data? Are they after your consumer data? What are they after in your business? So that we know how to better, so we know that how to provide the best security solution for your business. And when you're doing monitoring properly, you know, you get those answers.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing too. Statistically, what I think it was, and it depends on where you find it in what year, but statistically, people don't find that somebody was in their system for like 90 days.
Correct.
I've seen it as long as an average of 120 days on other statistics. Okay. So how much damage can a cybersecurity attack do to your business if someone goes unchecked for 90 days?
Yep. I have an example of one. It was about 110 days, but we couldn't even go back that far because there was no SIEM in place. So the Office 365 audit logs only does 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost about $90,000. To give you an example.
That's crazy.
And they sold within a year and a half of that. So they couldn't recuperate. I don't think they were able to recuperate. So they had to sell the business within a year and a half of that happening.
That's crazy. Now, here's the flip side of that. I had a client. They had everything turned on. They had two-factor, all that. One of their clients sent an email to a phishing email, had their email hacked, which got a phishing email sent to them. They clicked on it. Somehow they got through two-factor because they let them in. She remembers even clicking on the yes, two-factor thing. I'm shaking my head. But our company saw the event within minutes of it happening. And we were immediately able to see, okay, there's a log on from Russia and people who aren't in Russia. No Americans really going to Russia right now. So we immediately knew that was potentially malicious. So within like, I think it was within like 15 minutes, we locked down that all those users that were affected that had the log ons. And we reset passwords and we did all the things. When we had our security team investigate, the hackers only looked at two inconsequential documents. They didn't download anything. They didn't do anything other than just view two documents that were not really, they didn't have any real information on them. What, this is like a state contractor. What would life be like for them if those people were able to just hang out for 90 days, look at all their contracts, look at all the personal information, look at all the contacts for the state that they're working on? How damaging would that have been for them?
Catastrophic.
And that's why we talk about monitoring. So that's monitoring your environment, like Office 365 or Google Workspace, monitoring your computers, monitoring any software as a service, apps that you're using if possible. Finding ways to make sure that if someone gets into any of your tools, your environment, you have a way of saying, you know, knowing and stopping them as quickly as possible. Because mistakes happen. Like, you know, like we had all the tools in place to keep somebody out. We had two-factor, we had all that stuff. They still got through because the employee or customer let them in. But then we have monitoring and response so that we can immediately respond to and block the activity when it happened.
Absolutely. So, and that goes to the point we just made. You know, we can have 50 security solutions in place, but if somebody just opens the front door and lets somebody in,
right,
then where are we? And that goes to the employee education piece that we just talked about in this previous segment. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. The monitoring response is definitely the second thing we want to take after the employee education, since the employee education is kind of just like, that should be the standard. That should be the bottom floor. Like, your employee should be trained. That's the weakest link. Then after that, you take your monitoring and response. Yeah, man, the longer they're in there, the more damage they can do. It's just like you're absorbing more power, let's call it, right? You're just absorbing more information, right? If you're in there for a week, you see 3 conversations. If you're in there for a month, you see 10 conversations. If you're in there for 3 months, you see 100 conversations. And one of those conversations has to be talking about finances and money and sending money somewhere. And if you can interject yourself in a money conversation between your clients and one of their vendors and intersect and have them change a wire number, that's all it takes.
Right.
If the person's not trained enough to know to pick up the phone and verify a wire transfer change over the phone.
Right.
Hey, John, I know you emailed me and said to change the wire transfer number. I just wanted to confirm that we are doing this.
Right.
Yes, Emilio, that was me. Or no, Emilio, that was not me. Now we have a bigger issue, and you know, we need to bring in the powers that be.
Right. That's why we talk about employee education. And what did we say in our last point, right? That criminals are now becoming really good social engineers. They're learning behavior and they're learning how to manipulate behavior. And if you open the front door and you don't monitor and you allow them to have all that information so that they can build a case and build a really good looking email that they can send out to your clients, you're just letting them do that. That's why we're talking about, like, you have to have a way of keeping them out, because that's what good social engineering does. They don't do all the activity on the first day. No, they wait and they read emails and they figure out what your signature looks like and they figure out who you're emailing and they figure out who you're doing business with and they collect all that information. And then they build out all the email campaigns ahead of time. And then in one day, they push them all out to all the different people to try to get as many people as they can. And they do a pretty darn good job of doing it in such a way that it looks real enough that people click on a regular basis. Out of the group, of that one client, they had 2 people click on the link and actually give away credentials, which I think is nuts. One of the staff that was there actually ran his mouse over it was a DocuSign or Microsoft. He ran his mouse over the sign in or whatever it was, and he looked at the address and went, "Yeah, you know, it just didn't look right to me, so I didn't click it and I called." And that's how he figured out what was going on. We were already going crazy calling people at that time because we saw it on our side. But he actually was the one who didn't click because he actually took a step back and thought it through.
I wish I had the source in front of me. Because people always ask, how are we preventing AI viruses and AI attacks? And the top 3 attacks were phishing attacks, social engineering, and ransomware. Like the basic ones, right? It's no super new technology that's outsmarting everybody. It's just the basics. Phishing, social engineering, and ransomware.
With that, I think let's actually move into ransomware, because that leads us into topic number 3, which is disaster recovery.
Yeah, that's my hosting skills.
So what happens if somebody, this criminal organization, they get through your 2-factor, somebody clicks on a link, you know, all of that stuff, they successfully are able to launch. Maybe it's a new ransomware. So let's talk about this too. Ransomware is changing on a regular basis. They're using AI tools to create new ransomware that doesn't necessarily always get picked up by the most recent, the newest technology. What does that mean? That means that you could have an incident where things get wiped and your AV especially if it's not doing behavior monitoring, but some AVs may not capture it. So what's your backup plan? And do you have a plan if all of that stuff disappears overnight? So when we talk about disaster recovery, we talk about having not just one backup, but multiple backups. Having an on-site backup because it's quicker, and then also having an off-site, untouchable, one that actually creates a whole new backup. So you have time frame backups, if you will, over and over again every day. So you can go back and actually grab a healthy version of your data. Disaster recovery here. And here's a great example of where we see this in action. Casinos. We look at Las Vegas. Here in Olympia, we just had one of our local casinos. I'm sure they haven't said it out loud yet, but by the signs of it, it all looks like it's probably a ransomware attack. Now, in these guys' case, we'll see what the long-term result is, but they were able to get up in like 3 days, which one of two things happened. Either they rushed the process or they had good backups and a quick response team, and they knew exactly how to get things back up and they had already practiced everything. But you look at MGM Grand was down, 10 days or 14 days or something like that, losing $8 million a day just in lost income. And it was a ransomware. That one was a ransomware, but it was also because an employee and their IT staff gave away, I think, reset a password or something. But having backups is critical to be able, especially if you collect a lot of data. If most of your stuff's online, might be a little easier to recover. But if you have servers, if you're highly dependent on the data that sits on your machines or the actual, like you have a CRM or you have a tool or you're in, you think about dentist offices, you think about people who keep records, you're in production, any of those things that every day that you're not working, you're not bringing in money. Those are huge cases to make sure you have a really good disaster recovery plan, because the faster you can safely get back up, the faster you start making money again, the faster your employees are not just sitting around doing stuff. I talked about this, and it's funny, I didn't grab it. I don't think I have my book sitting on my desk, but I talked about this in one of the chapter in a book that I was a part of recently about just what it costs. I have to grab one of my books, but the amount of money when I did my research was just astronomical. When you look at what is a dental practice alone, just a small dental practice bring in, and it was several thousand dollars a day, just a day that they bring in if they're a medium sized dental practice. So you think the faster they get back up, the faster they're able to be paying employees with the money that they're making as opposed to paying employees with money that they're not making.
Completely agree. I was having this conversation, and I feel like everything we're going on right now, I echoed over and over and over last week when I was talking to everyone. When I was telling them the steps, right? The education, the modern response, and then I said, also, I'm never going to tell you that I can prevent 100% of any attacks, right? I'm going to tell you that we're going to try to mitigate and we're going to try to limit the blast radius. Now, in the event that someone does get into your network or someone does hack you, we will have a full-blown disaster recovery and business continuity plan. What does that mean, Emilio? That means that when you're attacked and we reach out to your cybersecurity insurance and your attorneys, now the forensics IT team is going to take all of your devices. So how do you keep working when you've been hacked and all your devices are taken and they're being analyzed on what happened, right? We need to get new devices. And how do we get that information on the new devices? It's with our disaster recovery and business continuity plan, right? So with that information, we put it back on the devices and we keep working while the forensics team, does the research and tries to figure out what happened. You know, and I just feel like this is a point that you have to drive home, because, you know, it's very, people just aren't aware, right? People aren't users aren't educated, business owners aren't educated that when one of these attacks takes over your whole system, you're at a standstill. So not only is money not coming in, it's hurting your reputation, right? Because now you're looking bad with current clients. Now new clients that come to you, you can't service them because you're not up and running, you know? And what does this do to your employee morale? All right, are we going to have a job next week? What's happening? Should I start looking elsewhere? Should I jump ship? Just so many different factors come into place once you're attacked that the last thing you want to worry about is how am I going to recover and continue business? Right. That's something that you want to have kind of the analogy I like to give is a fire drill, right? When you're in school, you do a fire drill. In the case of a fire, you know that you should walk down these stairs, come out of this door, be at this parking lot, right? When you go on a cruise, the first thing you do on a cruise is you do a fire drill. In case of an emergency, this is where your monster station is. This is the, you know, the lifeboat that you're going to be on, et cetera. When you work in an office building, you know, periodically they do fire drills. If something were to happen, you go down this elevator, you go down this way. Same thing with your disaster recovery plan. In the case of fire, break this glass, who do we call? What does the CEO do? What does the assistant do? What does the IT team do? What lawyer do we call, right? What cyber insurance company do we call? Like all those things need to be planned ahead and they need to be ran through so that, you know, anybody is prepared for, you know, this unfortunate event, let's call it.
You're exactly right. And I think I found it. And funny, I have my book like literally right next to me. If anybody local wants one, come talk to me and I will, I'll get your copy. But even in there, I was my research that I did. So get this, an average like dental office makes between $5,000 and $17,000 a day. So that means a medium sized dental office can lose $120,000. Just in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You think about that, $17,000 for like a good sized dental office or just $5,000 a day. That's still ridiculous. I mean, so it's worth it. It's worth the money to put in really good backup plans in case monitoring and response tools, just, you know, the amount of, and we're going to do a separate podcast on this, but Microsoft recently had an article, or there was an article about Microsoft out that back last year they got hacked and some, I think it was a Russian group stole their code for Windows. Okay. If a really smart criminal group steals Microsoft code, now all of a sudden they've got access to things that can make viruses more prevalent. They can make zero-day attacks really easy, and they can make ways for viruses to get past Microsoft tools. That's a pretty scary thing for Microsoft to get, for one, have a data breach, and number two, for them to have their code. And now all of a sudden, they've got tools that they didn't have before. They've got information they didn't have before. So this is where why monitoring response is really important, because we're coming to a day where even, you know, things are coming out so quick that even, you know, some virus protection just isn't going to catch it. It's just the way it is. So, so then number three, and this will be our last part is security updates and fixes. So here's one of the things I learned. I went to a cybersecurity conference early December of this last year. And I was a panelist for that, but they had one of the local colleges. It's Whitman. I always forget which one it is here in Washington State, but they had a huge cyber attack a couple of years ago, took them out, ransomware. I mean, like it was a big disaster. They had a data breach. Tons of student information was released. And they had who at the time was the IT CISO on stage talking about how they recovered. And their attack vector in which the hackers got in after they did all their research was not statistically the highest thing, which is employee related. It was actually a piece of equipment that had a zero-day attack that no one knew about until it happened. It was something that they got patched immediately, but the hacker, I think it was a switch, got in through a zero-day attack, and the patch for it had just come out. I think they knew, they found about it. They literally just come out like the week after or something like that. The attack happened. But what this highlights is the importance that you need to make sure that all of your equipment, your computers, your switches, all everything in your business is regularly updated with the latest security updates and fixes. If you have Cisco and you haven't updated your switches, for example, you need to look at them because they have a security patch that's needed. It's super important that this becomes like a normal thing that you guys do on a regular basis. Like, you need to be going into your equipment and making sure that they're patched and that they've got the latest updates. I don't know if anybody's noticed this. I know I've noticed. Notice how Apple brings out a new patch. It almost seems like monthly now. It used to be that their updates were like once a year or twice a year, and it's now like quarterly at the very minimal. And that's just because the sheer amount of cyber attacks and security things that are happening. Like that there's proof in the pudding right there that Apple now has regular security updates.
We patch more aggressively as well now. Definitely. Yeah.
Right. And so that's one of the things that just, it has to happen, because the last thing you want to do is have a piece of equipment that's just unpatched. And that's the reason why criminals got in.
Yeah, it's basically like, you know, I'm already in your house. I already know how to unlock the doors.
Yeah,
I'm just going to plan my attack a little better because I already know how to pick your lock. Like, you haven't updated the lock. Yeah. It's the same lock that I know how to open. So, you know, I'm just going to take my time. So that whenever I do plan my attack, it's the most effective that it can be.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those things that's really not hard to do that could save a lot of money and time by literally just logging in and hitting update. And then making sure like things like Microsoft things are up to date and all of your other tools, Zoom, anything that talks online is up to the latest version. So,
I definitely agree.
Well, with that,
yeah, running up on 50 minutes.
On 50 minutes. So next week we're working on. We think we have a guest lined up for next week, but we're going to talk about the Russians next week. So buckle up. We're going to talk about are the Russians coming to get you? Because they're one of the biggest cybercrime groups that we're seeing right now. China and Russia are two of the biggest. And that Microsoft thing I referenced was about China. So we're going to go over that article in length next week in our cybersecurity segment and talk about just why it's important to be thinking about some of this stuff.
Yep. So stay tuned. If we do have a guest, it might be a PR person. We'll confirm on that through our socials. So just, you know, if you're not following us, go ahead and follow us, and we will see you next week.
Yeah. Thanks for watching. Hey, always remember too, if you want to throw things in the chat on Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever you're watching this, or you have a topic that you want us to cover, please send that over to us because we'll make sure that your topic or your questions get covered. So yeah, definitely make sure you let us know. And we would love to cover your questions here on the Business in Bytes podcast. So thanks for watching, and we'll talk to you soon.